Chapter 56. The aspirins had helped a little to begin with, but they had become decreasingly effective as the day wore on. So in addition to the pounding headache, nausea, and full-body weakness, his stomach was killing him. His early rest stop meeting with Salter and his lawyer hadn't done much to improve his condition. There was no way he was going to see Dee today. He didn't have the energy or the desire. Although he had lusted after her for so long, and here she was demanding to see him, it was a no-go. Even picturing her tanned nude body, muscles twitching in anticipation, and fantasizing about her begging him to take her in that sexy, vaguely southern accent of hers, couldn't do the trick. So he texted her, and told her the rendezvous would have to wait another day. She'd tried calling a few times, but he refused to answer and let her calls go to voicemail. He texted her again, explaining that he was honestly quite sick, and asked her to give him a day. The calls stopped after that. Dressed in the same rumpled, sweaty clothes he'd slept in, he'd fallen into bed. He'd spent most of the day in that half-conscious, half-asleep state that only hangovers and certain drugs can induce. At about 3 in the afternoon, after Dee's calls had stopped, and he felt a bit more human, he got up, took a long shower, and shaved. His hair still wet, he fell back into bed and finally into a deep sleep. It didn't last, and that was a shame. He was dreaming of Kayla, not Dee. They were young again, impulsive and stupid in love. They were on a beach somewhere, naked, just holding each other. Kayla was laughing. Even in the dream, he realized Kayla's laugh was something he hadn't heard for years. It was one of those paradoxical things about dreaming, how you could be a part of it and be apart from it, and that the contradiction didn't matter. Then a weird image attached itself to the dream. He looked away from Kayla to an impossible tree rising out of the sand. On a thick branch above their heads, a stunning black-feathered bird was singing, but without sound. It wasn't that Vic couldn't hear. He heard the roar of the waves. He heard Kayla's laugh. It was that he knew the bird's voice had been taken from it. He heard the phone, too, and that was not part of the dream. He grabbed the phone and checked the number to make sure it wasn't Dee again. "Lorraine, hi," he said, still groggy. "Your voice is all sleepy and sexy." "Sleepy, yes. Sexy, no." "What's the matter? What's wrong?" "Nothing. I got into a fight with an old friend, and then we got drunk together. Now I'm just trying to get some sleep and recover."
"Poor baby," she said without a hint of sarcasm. "I can come over and make it better."
"A long sleep is the only thing that will make this better. Why are you calling?"
"I have a surprise for you."
"Really? What kind of surprise?"
"I told Mike that I was going back to Lowell to visit my Aunt Maria."
"I'm not getting you," Vic said.
"I'm here, Vic."
"Here? Here where?"
"In paradise."
Vic sat up in bed as if he were spring-loaded. That undid all the good the sleep had done him.
"Vic? Vic,"
she said when he didn't respond.
"Yeah, Lorraine, sorry, I'm still waking up. That's great."
"You know what's even better?"
Her voice crackled with excitement.
"I'm in the hotel lobby."
Vic fell silent again. A spectrum of emotions went through him that began in anger, but ended in a kind of serenity. Serenity because Lorraine had helped push him to make up his mind. He was going to run, and though he hadn't yet figured out just how, he thought that maybe Lorraine could help him.
"Well then," he said, "if you're in the lobby, you better come on up."